Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan and from Brooklyn, New York as well. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney, happy Halloween. What's up, brother?
What's up, Andrew? Who cares about Halloween? Who cares about what's up with me? The world wants to know yet again how old Spursy Andy's feeling.
Conflicted for a variety of reasons, which we will go into in great detail as we'll talk about what happened at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium over the weekend in the 3-0 thrashing that Manchester United laid down upon them. Of course, Nuno Espirito Santo is out at Spurs, a move that just simply cannot be shocking to anyone. I don't care how few matches he's been in charge. Not a surprise. We'll talk about that. Other things in the Premier League, Chelsea with a nice performance, a great win for Crystal Palace over Manchester City. A couple MLS notes that we want to get to. This should be a fun, neat, and tidy podcast, JJ. You say who cares about Halloween. Those are words that I simply have a hard time even putting together in the same sentence. In my house, it's the biggest thing there is. It's bigger than birthdays, Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever, Thanksgiving. My 5-year-old especially, it's like a 3-week-long event. It's not a singular night, from decorating to like costume decisions to just like... So it all culminated last night, and I'm still, I guess, kind of, you know, in that like post-Halloween malaise of just, you know, it was all just a whirlwind. Did it even really happen?
The streets of Brooklyn were incredible last night. It was the young, the old, the everyone out dressed in a variety of, some of them were absolutely amazing costumes.
Yeah.
I went out for a drink with my friend Mark and my friend Vanessa. And happy birthday to Mark, by the way. And just walking by the window of the bar, there was a smorgasbord of usually quite funny, but also in some cases absolutely terrifying characters. One guy, genuinely, I wanted to call our mutual friend in the NYPD just to check this guy out, because his Pennywise costume was so good and the makeup on his face was so terrifying that I thought, this is a man who may actually be Pennywise and may do horrendous things to us all.
Yeah, it is a great night for murderers to roam free and simply fit in among us. And now they go back to being the outcasts that they are. But I'll say this,
thanks,
JJ, I'll say this as a natural transition into what we're here to talk about. The distance covered by Jack last night, watching him near the tail end of trick-or-treating, you could see, like, I know all the different versions of him. Like, when he's happy, sad, tired, exhausted, excited. I just know him better than anyone on earth, I think. And
he's your son.
Right, exactly.
Well done. And what do you want an award?
And so, but what I'm saying is, by the end of it, I could see on his face, he's sprinting from house to house as the night is winding down to try to get whatever candy is remaining. And I could see his face, and he's done. Like, he's a shell of a person, but he's going through the motions. And I swear, if we put his distance covered last night in trick-or-treating around the neighborhood up against Tottenham's under Nuno, Jack probably dwarfs it. Just dwarfs it. Let's go right into it now, JJ. I say that Tottenham last in distance covered per game this season. Like, there are just certain things that you got to kind of pick and choose what you're going to suck at. Okay? Like, if you're... Like, you can't be not working hard. Maybe it's unfair to directly equate not covering a lot of distance with not working hard, but sometimes, I guess, there is somewhat of a link between the two.
Okay.
Like, you can't be bad at finishing and not really running very much. Like, you can't not make any substitutions, like Nuno has been known to do a couple times this season, and sort of, like, wonder, why are my guys tired? Why aren't guys running more? I mean, it's just like, they were kind of bad at everything. And anyone who's listened to this podcast for any length of time knows that I typically do two things when managers get fired. One, I always am somebody who puts blame on players over managers, sometimes to a fault. But that's
very much so.
But
you're not entirely a systems guy. You do not believe that everything that comes from the sideline influences what happens on the field. And I know that's not true.
The manager can only do so much. Players have to make that pass.
You're not fully convinced of how important the managerial role is.
Well, wait a minute. I think that's a bridge too far. But I do think that we as a collective soccer media, sports media, sometimes have this way of letting players off the hook. It's easier to blame the manager. He's in charge, and ultimately they're the one who wear it. But like I just said, players, like the manager, can tell guys where to play, what he wants them to do, how quickly to move the ball, how when to press, when not to press. But like missed passes, blown opportunities, you know, bad first touches, things like that. Like players need to take responsibility and accountability. So that is my default position, generally speaking. And my other default position is stability. Stability is important. Firing a manager 10 games into a season, that is not showing any faith in that manager. And I say those things to then come full circle and tell you that this had to happen. Even with me feeling that way from a general perspective when it comes to covering the sport, even with me feeling that way, this had to happen. This was so bad. This was so hard to watch. This was showing so little chance of turning in any other positive direction under this manager. Even when it was good, it was bad. And I know that we're going to make comparisons to Mourinho because there are certain elements of the way these two guys wanted to play. These last two managers that Tottenham had, typically an attack-minded club, they've had these two defensive-minded managers based on counter-attacking principles. But like, even under Mourinho, you could at least say when it was good, it was good. 6-1 at Old Trafford, the 5 goals against Southampton. When he first came in, digging them out of where they were in the Champions League and getting them into the knockout stages. Like, there were good moments. With Nuno, I look back at those first three games, and we can go back and listen to those podcast, and even then we can say, well, like I remember saying, well, they won. I mean, I don't know what else to really say about it. Like, they defended for their lives and they eked a goal. And like, okay, like, is that sustainable? Probably not. No, it was never going to be sustainable. They were just bad at so many things. They were lifeless in all areas. JJ, I texted you during the game over the weekend. I've never, in whether it was White Hart Lane or Wembley or the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I've never heard the atmosphere that lifeless, that quiet. The only time the atmosphere sprung to life was to boo Nuno after an absolutely moronic substitution decision. You're not playing any attack-minded football. You have one guy who's showing that initiative, and he's the one who gets yanked off. It felt like a microcosm of everything that we've seen so far under this guy. JJ, I have a couple stats here that just scream change must happen. I mentioned Mourinho. We all know how bad things felt under Mourinho. So I bring this up not to like boost Mourinho or anything like that, just to put in perspective just how bad this was.
Okay.
Tottenham have now lost 5 games this season. They did not lose their 5th game last season under a manager that we all agreed had to go until January 31st. It's hard to be one of England's top clubs. You can all make your jokes, but Tottenham are that, certainly in reputation and in general recent history. It's hard to be one of England's top clubs and look like this for 10 games and still keep your job. 18th in goals, 18th in being shut out, 19th in shots, 19th in chances created. The only clubs with a worse XG than Tottenham, a team with Kane and Son, are Newcastle and Norwich. 16th in goals conceded, 14th in XG against per game, last in distance covered, last in losses by 3 or more goals, trounced in every London derby that they've played. It just had to happen.
I completely and utterly agree with you. I was warming up with Yoa for our game at the weekend, our men's soccer team game, and my friend Luke, who's a West Ham fan, came over, and I didn't know, was he just really, really enthusiastic about Nuno staying as a Spurs manager forever. But he said, come on, he's only had 10 games. You can't, you know, you got to give him a chance. And I said to him straight away, I said, this is not turning around. It won't turn around. It can't turn around. I've never got a text message from you quite like this, though. Even during the Mourinho era, I'd have to text you. You would rarely get in touch with me to slag Mourinho off. And this was your message. Tottenham are absolute watching this team pathetically putter around in attack is just so draining. And I sent that to a mutual friend of ours, and RJ, and he said, great use of the word putter. Because that's exactly what it was. I saw someone tweet, I think it might have been Adam Crafton or maybe Miguel Delaney, one of the two. And they tweeted, this is one of the games where you have to ask, what are Tottenham doing in training? What is their plan? You know, what would a Tottenham session look like? Because there was no offensive plan. There was no clue how to get through United. And it was as good as the United goals were, and they were good, and as well set up as United were, and we'll get to all that, Tottenham were just pathetic. It was horrendous to watch. In fact, I just wanted, I had to watch it, you know, I had to watch it for the podcast. There are games where I can just go, nah, I'll, whatever I'll do, I'll skim through that one on the podcast or I'll catch the highlights. This one I had to watch, and I was angry at Tottenham for being so bad.
Well, it's really, and I mean, it's really been many games this season that have looked like that. Now, they have managed to score in some of those. Like, but I would say of the 10 games they've played in the league, and by the way, outside the league, it's not going great. They're third in their conference league group right now, behind Rennes and Vitesse Arnhem. So, like, it's not going great.
Hitters.
Not going great there either. Now, they are into the, what, the last 16 of the Carabao Cup, but... All right, like we'll see. We'll see what
Andrew at this
goes.
Rate
but
they're
like,
going to end up. They're going to end up in the Big Ten or the Pac 12 or something like that.
But
you
I
know,
mean,
how many more conferences can they go through? They're terrible.
I know. I would say there's really, even with their wins, there's really only been one game this season where I thought that looked good today, and that was after they beat Newcastle, who are a disaster themselves.
Yes.
And by the way, that was still 3-2. Like, Newcastle did score two goals against Tottenham. So now, like, we say all that. You and I are on the same page. This is, like, the problem here is Nuno's being dragged through the mud. His reputation has taken an unbelievable hit here. I almost wonder, is that even fair? Like, was this guy, this was never the manager that they wanted. The players all knew that. We've heard, even when they were winning early on, there were still like those little rumblings that you see on Twitter of like, this person reports Tottenham players aren't settled with this manager. There are still Tottenham players like in that room that don't buy, that aren't buying into this. And you're never sure who is that. Is that like a guy who's not playing and he's bitter? Or is that, you know, someone of massive importance to this team? Like, but you heard just enough of that, even when they were winning those early games, that you're like, "Eh, like, is that a red flag that I should be paying attention to?" And maybe it is. Like, I can see now why attack-minded players who got out of the Mourinho era and thought, "Okay, maybe we'll have a chance to like to be fun again," and then this is so much worse than that.
Yeah.
And so like. I kind of feel bad for this guy because this is what his style is, and they never should have hired him in the first place. They didn't really want to hire him in the first place. We talked about it then. Like, we joked. It's their seventh choice, and everyone knows it. And,
I think this reminds me. Have you seen The Thick of It, which was the show, the BBC show that inspired Veep? Same writers. Malcolm Tucker is basically the spin doctor, the government spin doctor, and he's in the back of a minister's car, a newly appointed minister for health and social welfare or something like that, and she's worried she's going to get sacked. And Malcolm Tucker goes, the Prime Minister is not going to sack you after a week. Sacked after 12 months looks like you f***ed up. Sacked after a week looks like we f***ed up. And that's basically what's happened here. Levy has just admitted his mistake and cut his losses early. This was and you're very in tune with what's going on the forums and in the stands at Tottenham Hotspur as well, and just generally how the supporters feel. I'm not, but the one quote that keeps coming back and rears its ugly head is from Daniel Levy, who a month before appointing Nuno basically talked about the Tottenham way, exciting football, passing football, bringing the youth through, all the things that Nuno would have, you know. Nuno is in a different zip code to that kind of thinking in football. And this was never going to work. And in that sense, it was really wrong to appoint him.
It was. Of course it was. And in terms of like the mood of the club or the mood around the club, this, I would say, is the worst that I have seen it. It was certainly...
Which stunned me when you said that. Like, because I would have thought that when things started drip feeding out of the Mourinho camp, I would have thought, you know, there was some bad performances in that era that I thought maybe that would have overshadowed this. And but the toxicity seems to be even worse in the stands.
It's worse now in some way. So under Mourinho, it was very ugly because the fans were not, like, there were factions within the fan base. And so that created a kind of an ugliness between fans. There were fans kind of like myself of like, this manager has an excellent track record. Can we give him a chance? There were fans who were more of your mind of from day one, this is not going to work enough already. So that caused a lot of inner Tottenham strife. This is worse because everyone was on the same page of what are we doing here? Why is this happening? Enough of this. Like, everyone was united in being against this one guy. It's why he's probably a lovely guy. It's why I feel bad for him. He was thrown into a situation that was not, it just wasn't right for him. And so just like that ugliness was something completely different in terms of negativity around the club that I have not really seen. And, you know, you talk about, we can talk about Nuno or whatever, where he goes from here, but I'm not really even thinking about that right now. I'm going back to what you were talking about in Daniel Levy and how much of this is he to blame for. And I want to ask you this question, JJ, because it's something I'm really having a hard time with. Unquestionably, whatever Tottenham have fallen to began the season that they reached the Champions League final. And, you know, Pochettino only lasted a couple months into the next season. Then it was Mourinho, who only lasted a year plus. Now it's this manager who lasted 10 games in the league, 17 total. And I think about the position Daniel Levy was in, and he's going to take a lot of heat on this, and rightfully so, because it feels like pretty much every decision he's made since the Champions League final has been the wrong one. However, what you and I have come to agree with over these last couple years is that Tottenham are in need of a rebuild. Something is wrong here structurally. They need new blood in there. They need new ideas. Players need to be moved out. It's all got to change. And I just wonder, okay, it's Daniel Levy's job to recognize that, but how hard is that to reach a Champions League final, lose it, okay, but like you're still in a position that Tottenham never even really dreamed of being in. Reach a Champions League final and then say, okay, it's rebuilding time. That's hard. It's almost, in some ways, I would never be regretful of reaching that Champions League final. It's a run and a memory that I'll cherish the rest of my life when thinking about this club. But in a weird, backwards way, it's the worst thing that could have ever happened to him because it did paper over cracks and it did make them think, okay, Pochettino, it's done here. But if we bring in Mourinho, this other manager, he'll get us over the line. Mm. We saw how close we were. Look how far we went in Europe. We beat City. We came back against Ajax at Ajax. You know, we beat Dortmund en route there. We tied at Barcelona to get out. Like, they did all these great things, but like it was always papering over cracks of bigger issues, huge issues within this club. And it's all come to a head now, and now they're dealing with it. Now they've got to rebuild, and I don't know what that looks like. They probably should have let Harry Kane go and use that money. I mean, look how he's playing right now. It was a hard thing to come to terms with that, but like, I mean, isn't that kind of what a rebuild is? When you're going to tear something apart, your best player, bringing back 120 million, you know, new ideas from management rather than just trying something a little bit different than the previous one. Like, that's where they are now.
I'm sure there was a question in there for me somewhere, but you just seem to get caught up. You seem to, with every word, live out the emotion of 2019 and the disappointment of the subsequent months.
Well, the question is, the question that it was essentially buried in there, and I apologize, is that, can you blame Daniel Levy for not, after that Champions League final, switching into some form of rebuild mode?
Andrew, here's the billion-pound sterling elephant in the room. And I go back to it all the time, and I do feel sometimes like you want to push against it. You feel like, the new stadium had to happen. The new stadium needed to be as big and as glorious as it is because, you know, we'll have NFL revenues down the line. And it's long-term thinking, and the economics of it makes sense. But Maurizio Pochettino was betrayed in this whole endeavor for the stadium by not being given the funds to continue to replenish and rebuild and revive the club. That is inescapable. And half the reason that half the reason Mourinho was appointed was for what you said. Well, this is a manager who can do a lot with the players that you've already got. But really what needed to happen was not drip feeding, not Vertonghen going and then Alderweireld going, but a complete, you know, overhaul of a lot of personnel, a lot of players that weren't working out. Like, how is Dele Alli still at the football club?
Yeah.
Is that the case? And that comes down to simple economics. They don't have the money to go and continue the things they needed to do. What Tottenham did was put the cart before the horse. Tottenham were on the way to being a big and important club and a club that would be regularly at the top of the table and regularly competing in Europe. And in that process got retarded and stunted by the money flowing in another direction into a stadium. So Tottenham decided, we'll be a big club before we have a good team, like a really good team. Like, there's no reason Tottenham couldn't have been back in the quarterfinal or semifinal the following year in 2020 if that summer had been managed correctly, but it wasn't. And the previous summers weren't managed correctly.
Well, yeah, I think it's what happened before that summer.
Yeah, before that, there were signs of decline. I mean, while they were on the way to the Champions League final, they were struggling domestically. They were losing at home or away to Bournemouth in the Premier League. So, you know, we're talking about a problem that's years in the making.
And absolutely. Like you said,
it finally caught up. I honestly believe that they needed to find a halfway house. If they absolutely had to move out that instant from White Hart Lane, which I don't understand why it had to be then, right in the middle of this gestation period for the team, if they had to do it, was there not a halfway house that wouldn't mean they'd completely underfund the first team and completely cut the capabilities away from the manager? Like, really, Andrew, Maurizio Pochettino, firing him, all right, things had gone stale. Yeah, sure. Things had gone stale with the players that he had and that he had brought through how many different campaigns and how many sessions of getting his pressing techniques right and all that running.
Well, yes.
All that running.
Of course. Why late in seasons during their title runs, they fell apart.
They didn't have the depth to sustain it. They needed to be backed by Daniel Levy, and they weren't, because Daniel Levy was far too, and you can, there's plenty of pieces I've read from good Tottenham insiders who talk about the distraction that the stadium became, and the eye was taken off the ball, literally and figuratively, and here's where we are.
Yeah, the stadium thing is interesting. I'm sure it played a role. However, I don't know that changes the idea of, like, okay, if you want to say that that's why they didn't buy players, fair enough, I suppose. But I don't know that explains why they didn't sell players.
Well, that is another point. That is another point. I guess they went into a mentality of, you know, what we have, we'll hold. What we have is, an assessment was made that what they had was going to be good enough. We'll get rid of the manager. What is that phrase? A new broom sweeps all. Mourinho would be that broom, and everybody would be swept up and revitalized and regenerated. And it wouldn't matter that none of these players were fit to play the kind of football Mourinho wanted. It would matter that Mourinho's best football was like, what, a decade ago. None of that would matter. It would all just be okay. And Levy also had I read a piece when Mourinho was sacked about how Levy had a long-term love of Mourinho. And Levy made a decision based on what Mourinho was, not what he actually is currently. And that didn't work. And the next thing, they're spiraling, looking for a manager, and they get rejected by, we've got to expect at least five, and they end up with Nuno.
So here's the last things we'll say on this. Daniel Levy is coming under a lot of criticism. Obviously Nuno is, but I don't think that, like, I hope we don't forget to bring up Fabio Paratici, Tottenham's new sporting director, because I've been reading about what happened exactly with Paulo Fonseca, because it seemed like he was one of the guys that Tottenham really wanted, the former Roma boss, attack-minded, more in the mold of kind of maybe what made sense for a total mindset change at Spurs. And I saw at the Mirror, because it seemed like that was almost done, and the Mirror has a piece up where they write this about what happened with Fonseca, because Tottenham could potentially be interested in him again. They write here, Fonseca was heavily linked with the job in mid-June, but his attacking brand of football failed to win over Tottenham's newly appointed director of football, Fabio Paratici. The former Roma boss even claimed he had agreed in principle to take over in North London before Spurs' U-turn. Quote, "The agreement was done. We were planning the preseason, and Tottenham wanted an offensive coach," Fonseca told the Daily Telegraph in September. "It wasn't announced, but we planned preseason players. But things changed when the new managing director, Paratici, arrived, and we didn't agree with some ideas, and he preferred another coach. It's what the chairman, Levy, and sporting director, Steve Hitchin, asked for, to build a team who can play attractive and offensive football, and I was ready for that." It's hard to read that and then see what's gone on since.
It makes you wonder, first of all, is Paratici on the same page as, well, he's clearly not read the unwritten Tottenham ethos, which, by the way, their players have, and their supporters have held for decades, is that Tottenham play a certain way. And Levy then doesn't seem to understand it either, which is unforgivable. He's nearly been in some sort of a role at Spurs for nearly 20 years. This is, I would struggle to read that too.
I
would hate reading that.
It's kind of like when I read like how close they were to signing Jack Grealish, what was that, 2 years ago? Like,
it came down to
something like £4 million, like something crazy.
I've heard Amanda spoke to me privately, and she says there's times in the middle of the night where you just sit bolt upright all of a sudden, and there's like a cold sweat, and you turn to her and you say, "Jack Grealish?" Just like that.
Yep. Last bit on this, the next manager for Tottenham, it sounds like, I almost had a hard time believing this, but it sounds like negotiations with Antonio Conte are at like the 1 yard line.
There's no point even speculating on this because the here we go man.
Oh,
Fabrizio Romano, who is the here we go man, 2 hours ago, Tottenham are preparing contracts and paperwork to appoint Antonio Conte as new manager.
But he has not here we go'd it yet.
No, he hasn't here we go'd it. But like when the here we go man tells you it's this advanced, it's very, very, very unlikely to fall apart. Agreement set to be signed until June 2023. Once all details will be fixed, Antonio Conte is currently in London with his camp ready to meet with good old aforementioned Fabio, who hopefully he doesn't drop the ball on this one.
So look, I would be beggars can't be choosers. I would be an utter fool to not like this. He's the most decorated, in-demand manager that's out there. Had Solskjaer lost his job, he probably would have gone to Manchester United in what was like this cage match between Tottenham and Manchester United over like two managers may enter, only one will leave type games. The only things about Conte that feel weird to me, I get why Tottenham want him. He's like, this is a great manager who's really accomplished. I don't fully understand why he wants this job unless he, A, loves London, which is possible. I'm sure that's a draw for a lot of international managers. That's
sure.
a good place to manage. Tottenham are a high-profile club.
And he probably still has a house there from his time there.
It's possible, certainly. And he might just be desperate to get back in. And this might be his route in. But like, to me, tell me if I'm wrong, but doesn't he feel like a manager who comes in to a Manchester United, like a team that's loaded with talent, but for whatever reason, it's just not clicking. And he comes in and he takes that team and he makes them a title contender.
Well,
he does not feel to me like I'm going to oversee a rebuild type manager. And by the way, if what's to be believed about his contract is true, that what is it, an 18-month contract? What do you say, till 2023?
Yes.
Like, if that's true, then he's not really a rebuild manager, and it makes me worry that far different playing style. Maybe he'll get them back on the right course, and things will be different. But it almost feels a little Mourinho-y all over again, of like a guy, this is not a rebuilding manager.
Well, so, our friend Adam Crafton of The Athletic, he's on your same thinking. He goes, Conte would be mad to take Spurs' job, wouldn't he? He's a 2 to 3 year man who wins big trophies, taking on a club that needs rebuilding, that
right.
appear years away from even challenging for big trophies. I mean, fair play to everyone if it happens, but it's a pivot. It would be a pivot. Now, if I'm thinking about Conte in the Premier League the last time, what are the things that I am liking? What are the things that I can see are transferable from Chelsea to Spurs? Well, that Chelsea team that he took over, in terms of parts, is far superior to this Spurs team.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
But he is a very, very good coach. He's an excellent tactician, and he's a guy who will come in and kick asses, and he will demand things, and he will, you know, upset the apple cart a bit in a different way to Mourinho, in a very kind of energetic way. Now, whether he'll stay on side with Daniel Levy is another thing. I mean, he will demand transfers, Andrew. How's the kiddie looking for that? What was it he said about, Conte said about the Allegri family when he was manager of Juve? He said, you know, we're... he made some restaurant comparison, if any of the listeners can remember what it was. But he made a very disparaging comment about the way they spent their money, basically saying that they were shopping in, you know, Dollar General. That was the essence of what he said. And that did not go over well. But I think of, you know, okay, Tottenham have average players, players that in some positions, players that you worry about. I think of like the way he was able to come in. I think it was September or October, they lost of the title winning season when he was there, that they lost to Arsenal at Highbury. And he completely switched up the system, went with wing backs, utilized Victor Moses for most of that season. Mm. Victor Moses. And got a championship out of, you know, because I'll tell you, when Arsenal did that to them, I wasn't very convinced that Conte would go on to flourish, that he'd even make Christmas after that result. Yeah. And straight after it, he was able to identify what went wrong. He was identified the changes he needed to make. He could see the personnel, and it made a huge difference. Now they did have, like, I would stress that the quality of player that they had was much better than what Spurs have right now in a few key areas, including in the midfield. And that is, as we saw at the weekend, a wasteland for Spurs right now.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I kind of do think that this manager had to go beyond everything else we've said, is just that, like, we can say they're not good enough there, but are those just words, or are they actually not good enough there? Like, you know what I think of Tanguy and Ndombele. I think very highly of them. You know, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg is played well. Like, I don't think that people look at him and say he's the problem. And then Oliver Skip, who's emerged this season, I don't know. I hear a lot of negativity about Tottenham, but I hear a lot of positivity about him. Tottenham fans seem to be pretty happy that they've kind of unlocked this gem within their youth team.
So, I think, like, there's this... Sorry to cut across.
So to me, that feels more structural than talent.
Well, if we just look at the midfield that played at the weekend, there was... You could say, all right, so there's a sense about Højbjerg that he can be functional and be very good in that midfield, but that things around him need to be better, and that's not working out. Skip just literally substituted after the mistake for the second or third goal. And then the rest of that midfield, Andrew, was Lo Celso, who most Spurs fans now are really running out of patience with. They don't know what he is. Lucas, who got substituted, okay, attacking, but not really an out-and-out midfielder. And Son, not an out-and-out midfielder. So you had a midfield against Manchester United's midfield of really... Højbjerg and Skip. That's not good enough.
No, it was not. So we'll see where they go from here. It will be, of course, I'll be curious. I guess if everything's to be believed, then Antonio Conte, come on down.
Stop speaking, Andrew. I have an update.
Here we go.
Here we go. We'll have to see. This is the Here We Go man saying Antonio Conte is waiting to sign as Tottenham manager. Matter of final details.
Boy, I'd kill to know. It's always the final details that prevent them from doing good things.
Antonio's camp and Spurs board talking about final clauses. In order to announce the deal. That was 24 minutes ago. So we are still waiting for the full Here We Go, but you can follow the Here We Go man at Fabrizio Romano on Twitter.
All right, on to the other side of this, and that was the stay of execution for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
By the way, we should note that there is serious linkage here. Spurs, you know, we're questioning why Spurs would appoint a manager like this right now. Well, it means Manchester United can't have him.
Yeah, I hope that's not why they're doing it, though.
Well, it will be part of it, I would think.
I think that's a bonus that they can kind of like laugh about in their office afterwards. But I would hope that you do what's in the best interest of your club. I think if you start worrying about those types of like peripheral effects of your decision making and start using them as primary reasons for your decision making, then that's you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
So, well, we're one third of the way through the three-part act that Ole has to absolutely nail, his three-part audition, re-audition for the Manchester United job. So part one, very good. Part two will be midweek in the Champions League, and then part three will be against Manchester City.
Yep, we shall see. By the way, the one other thing, the final note on Nuno here, JJ, is that he completed the trifecta that you always talk about. In the statement that Tottenham released after he was let go, Fabio Paratici said, "Nuno is a true gentleman and will always be welcome here. We should like to thank him and his coaching staff and wish them well for the future." All three boxes were ticked.
It's great. It's great to see it, Andrew. That is a hashtag classy. Clapping hand emoji. Fair play, Fabio. Because that is a nice way to send him off. And, you know, he can say he's always won a treble.
I enjoy the he will always be welcome here. Really? In what capacity? I mean, he can pay for a ticket. We won't have him escorted out, of course. But, like, if he sets one foot on the sideline, security will be involved immediately.
If they imagine if they ended up naming one of the stands after him. The Nuno stand.
Manchester United, JJ, 3-0. A couple things that I wanted to mention on this. First of all, boy, that was a lot of money and talent on the United bench. Sancho, Rashford, Greenwood, Pogba, who's red-carded. I mean, you know, say what you want about Van de Beek, but, like, boy, there's a lot of good players on that bench right now.
It's almost as if they've spent lavishly and heavily over the last few years.
but, like, it will. I mean, Rashford came on, scored again. Every time since he's come back, has it been every game that he's played, he scored?
I love that finish. And there was like some ASMR quality to it as well. He opened his body out and he did the lesser seen, whipped along the ground with pace to the bottom corner finish, which he just nailed it perfectly, almost like an old Van Nistelrooy finish. And it hit the rigging, Andrew, and it gave me those feelings.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, sure did.
But, you know, it does lead to some interesting questions of, like, I just don't know who their 11 is.
Well, first of all, we should give Solskjaer credit, kind of, because I think he did the only option available to him and an option I discussed last week in the podcast, which was sitting back a bit, don't press, let them draw them onto you as much as you possibly can draw that complete mess of a side passing team that Tottenham are, but they did do it and then pounce a little bit, win your turnovers and break at pace. And you got to say United did that very well. And they ended up with overloads in midfield, just too many players. Fred, McTominay, Bruno Fernandes, and the linkage between Cavani and Ronaldo was very good. The Ronaldo goal was gorgeous. Just absolutely beautiful finish.
Really, honestly, incredible.
Yeah, and when you look at the angles, like Lloris had his angles covered perfectly and Ronaldo just put it in the one place that he just couldn't get to it quick enough.
Like
it
was, some people want to like blame Ben Davies or Lloris, but like can't we ever... Cristiano Ronaldo is one of the greatest players in history. He's one of the greatest goal scorers in history. Can't we ever just appreciate something without having, I'm not trying to let people off the hook. I'm sure Ben Davies could have maybe been positionally like a little bit close. I don't know, but like, can we ever just tip our hat and say, "Job well done"? That was sensational.
I you just have to enjoy the execution of that. That's an all-timer. That's one we'll be watching back in a few years. And the delivery was so good and was so perfect, as was his little patented cut back inside. And then slide the ball through for Cavani, whose finish was sumptuous too as well, for the second goal. And it worked for United. And you asked in the rundown, did you see anything different from United in this one? This is a quote from Louis van Gaal, speaking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer from the 27th of March, 2019. Now, I'm not saying it was park the bus tactics at the weekend. It wasn't. But... Van Gaal was being asked about, someone said to him, because United had made such an exciting start under Solskjaer, or what was perceived as exciting. And they kind of goaded Louis van Gaal into saying, "Well, why were you so boring with United?" And Van Gaal said, Mourinho changed to park the bus tactics and played on the counter. Now there is another coach who parks the bus and plays on the counter. The main difference between Mourinho and Solskjaer is that Solskjaer is winning. So you asked, is this anything new? No, we've seen this before from United. Maybe we haven't seen like that quite formulation of the side. But, you know, I remember they went to Anfield last January 2021. I remember that 0-0 game. And to be fair, United could have won that. No, Liverpool could have won it, but United could have won it too. And they sat off and looked to get at Liverpool on the break. And it worked. And I actually think this is the only way Solskjaer can construct the team. He's shown he doesn't know how to get the team to press properly or to have the correct trigger points when pressing or to even get the right team to do that. So he can't do that. They're not going to be a team that possesses through the center of the midfield. They don't have the players unless it's Bruno Fernandes who's on the ball. So he can't do that. So maybe this is the iteration he goes with, a kind of a mid-block or low block against the really good sides and look to break. And I'd be shocked if he does anything different against, I don't know what he'll do in the Champions League, but I'd be shocked if he does anything different against Manchester City.
Yeah, it's interesting the style that they're playing right now. That, you know, like this was a bad game all around.
Terrible.
I know if you're a United fan, you're pleased that, and the goals they scored, by the way, were great goals.
Yeah, but
three, you know, like there were not. I was gonna text you, had that game ended 1-0 and the Ronaldo goal was the only one, I was gonna say like that game did not deserve that goal as the goal. But in the end, they got two other really good ones too. But
yeah.
They were not peppering Hugo Lloris with chance after chance. It was
no.
Maybe this is, we've always said, who are they? Like, what are they under this manager? Maybe it's time we just accept that this is what they are. Maybe it's not what we want Manchester United to be. We think that there's enough talent there where they don't need to be a low block counterattacking team. But if it works for them, maybe just screw it, double down, be this team.
But there's also a perception that every single iteration of Alex Ferguson's Manchester United were like 2015 Barcelona, like the free flowing, sexy football, you know, Skittles and beer all the time. No, like there was many, many times where they were pretty dull and taciturn and difficult and won games, you know. It's kind
and
that, of a myth.
That's okay.
That's fine. But like everybody remembers, like when they think of United, they think of the 3-3 draw at Barcelona in like the Champions League in 99, which was like a really fun end-to-end performance, and you think, oh, that's the United that we remember. But you know, there was a time when they'd get Ji-Sung Park to do some man marking, or they'd shut things down with five in midfielder. They could be dull and ugly too, you know. It wasn't all one way, and counter-attacking was a massive part of the way they played.
Last bit on this, I feel like we're entering that phase now of Ronaldo's time, hit this second act with Manchester United, where every week becomes a referendum on the signing. And so we will continue that narrative. And I just ask, like, we know the things he doesn't do. He's not, you know, his work.
We don't need to list them. We know.
Right. But like this, though, the individual moments, like these are the things that, you know, yeah, United have some players who can do these in flashes. Bruno Fernandes has scored great goals. Marcus Rashford has scored great goals. But Ronaldo scores great goals somewhat consistently.
Well, hang on a second, though. The header against Atalanta, there have been some very good goals. At least four out of his five first goals, Andrew, went in off the keeper. All right. So, you know.
But I'm saying the goal.
He scores goals. Okay.
The goal he scored in this one, the way he set up the goal for Cavani. I do wonder sometimes if there's a little bit of like focusing on the things he doesn't do to the detriment of not appreciating the things that he does do.
Okay, let's get out of this quickly because I do not want this to be constantly on about Ronaldo. But Andrew, the fact of the matter was, you talk about the things he does, the things he doesn't do, whatever. He played in almost all the games in the league in the last month, and they hadn't won a league match until Saturday. And that's a month's worth of football. Mm-hmm. So what he does and doesn't do is rightly up for criticism and analysis.
But do the Champions League games count?
Of course they count.
All right, well, he scored a few big ones there.
Yeah, sure, definitely. And I'm the one that said when they signed him, he might end up with 20 goals in the season and 10 in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. It's possible. He did things at Juventus like that with great, great scoring feats. So where did they end up?
We need to find a way to create a Ronaldo scoreboard where it can be like, okay, like in this column, he didn't press there. Okay, that's a negative. Oh, he scored a great goal. Okay, that's a positive. I want to know at the end of the season which one outweighs the other. The things he doesn't do or the things he does.
When you bring in a player on his wages, of his stature, and everything that goes with it, the table or the measurement is at the end of the season on the actual table.
Look, the wage, I don't know what the, okay, no, I don't no, know no. the exact wages. They didn't break the bank for him.
His wages are significant, Andrew.
All right, we'll see.
And never mind his wages for a second. He is occupying the space of one of the aforementioned talents that you were reading out, where they did pay a lot of money. So, you know, you're just enthralled.
He's not as bad as a lot of people paint his presence on that team out to be. No, of course I know what his flaws are.
It's not about bad. It's about how the team functions with him in it and how they do against really good opposition or sometimes average opposition in the cases of Atalanta and whoever else you want to mention that they've lost to, Aston Villa. It's how the team functions overall. Be holistic, Andrew, please. Come on.
I'll tell you what, let's take a break. We'll collect ourselves. There's a few other things we want to talk about from the league and a couple MLS things as well. We'll do all that when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Back now on Caught Offside. Whew, that was a breathless start to the show, JJ.
The most amount of Tottenham we've done in a while.
Yeah, I know. There hasn't really been a ton to say about them, and sadly, today that all came to a head. A couple other things I did want to talk about in the league over the weekend. I don't want to give short shrift to Crystal Palace. Whew. That was your every week we talk about, okay, what were your eye-popping results? That was probably number one on the eye-popping power rankings for this week.
100%, Andrew. What a performance. And they've been, you know...
Go ahead, say it.
So far, there have been times... Now, they've had some devastating late draws.
Yeah, the Arsenal
and Swansea spring to mind. But they've been good. And I know definitely Aymeric Laporte getting sent off right before halftime is certainly not helpful.
Right, but they did that. Like, they caused that to happen.
Sure, they forced them into that position to do it. And... You look at the players that they have. I mean, I was on that. What's that? The Chelsea podcast I was on. London is Blue 2 years ago, and I was telling them how I liked Conrad Gallagher as he was about to go on I'm hoping he's Irish as well. As he was about to go on loan to Charlton, and they were just asking about, you know, were there any Chelsea youth players I really, really liked? And I'd only seen a tiny bit of him. And I'd read a lot that said he was, you know, some talent. I had no idea that he was going to flourish quite so quickly. And he, again, proves the rule that you're never more than 40 yards away from a Chelsea loanee. But
even now, by the way, look around wherever you're listening to this.
Yeah. It's like what used to say in New York City, you were never more than 20 yards from a rat. That is absolutely the case with a Chelsea loanee too. In fact, there's a couple moved in downstairs, and they're both on Chelsea's books.
I always wonder that when I'm in the ocean about sharks. I heard some kind of crazy stat once.
Really?
About
how close they are to you?
Depending on how many times you've been in the ocean in your life, there's a good chance at some point or another you've been within 20 feet of a shark, something like that.
Wow.
But don't quote me on that. Look it up. But yeah, something that made me think.
Well, so far, I guess I've got to take some. I know it's only 13th they're in, and it's only two wins. Yeah, there's a lot of draws in there. I mean, it should be four wins, I guess. But I guess I have to, even at this early stage where it's one win in five for them, for Crystal Palace, even at that, the fact they've gone to City and that they've won, I will eat some humble pie over saying I wasn't sure that Patrick Vieira was the right man for the job.
Okay. You're a big man.
Yeah, one more thing I just want to say about this game. The figures. I would love to know. I didn't get a chance to look or research, but City only had 14 shots. When's the last time they weren't in the 18, 19, 20 range, especially against opposition like this?
I don't know, but 14 is a respectable number considering they played 45 minutes down a man.
Yep, not for Manchester City, and only three of them on target. And the XG, Andrew, was 0.75 for City and 1.05 for Crystal Palace. I'm just saying, I know that the man down had a lot to do with it, but you don't see those kind of numbers regularly with old Peppy boy.
No, you don't. Which leads to my question about City. They've been playing well, so I don't want to go overboard, but any reason for concern on a result like that?
No,
I have one thing.
I think slightly more than a bit concerned. It's one of those things that, you know, they look good for so long, and I'm speaking about their defense, the center of their defense, mm-hmm. and the way they set up defensively, that often they, you know, they cruise through games, and it's not until like a Champions League quarterfinal or semifinal where you're like, uh-oh, what's going on here? Center defense of the defense would concern me a little bit.
Okay. I'm not saying that this is alarm bell time, but, you know, Kevin De Bruyne was taken off in the 59th minute, and it just kind of made me think a little bit. Like, he's played sort of inconsistently. He's been in and out of the lineup. He's dealing with injuries. He turned 30 back in June. Like, he's got an extraordinary amount of mileage that he's put in over the last few years between City's deep runs for a title, cup runs that they've gone on, extended Champions League runs, and what De Bruyne does for Belgium as well. Like, there's been a lot with him. Like, I'm not saying he's done. He's not done. But it's fair to wonder if he's due for a season where he takes a dip. And if that happens, our City, like, is he so important to City that they'll have a hard time handling that? When, by the way, at the same time, another guy they've relied on over the years, Raheem Sterling, seems to be having a similar sort of situation. And Pep spoke afterward about De Bruyne.
Yeah.
And he said he's trying more every single day to return to top form. Today he made a step forward in many things about playing or resting him. This is my decision because I know a lot of information about a player. In seasons, there are highs and lows, big moments, and the next game is another challenge, another opportunity. Kevin knows it. He's done more than good since he arrived here and wants to continue to do it. The problem is when he gives up trying, says it doesn't matter, that's not the case with him. So Pep is essentially there to parse through it. He's acknowledging that, like, De Bruyne knows, and I know, that we're not seeing what we're kind of accustomed to seeing, but no one's giving up on him, and he's not giving up on himself, and we'll be okay. But, like, this is not peak De Bruyne right now. And if that extends over the course of a season, that's a problem for them.
It's not just the miles on the clock, though, as well, Andrew. You know, the injuries you talk about is, you know, he's weary, and he had a tournament in the summer as well, which he probably shouldn't have played in. Mm-hmm. I know it was a facial injury, but at the same time, that's a lot of miles on the clock as well. City could definitely use, with Jack Grealish, his development and his kind of, you know, his development as a Manchester City player, I suppose, is the best way to put it, being fast-tracked a little bit.
Yeah. JJ, Liverpool, throw away a yes. two-goal lead. What happened?
They were not good after going 2-0 up, and Brighton were very, very good. And then the loss of Naby Keita to a hamstring injury completely took the zip out of the midfield. And I want to give, particularly for the second half, I want to give Brighton a lot of credit. Like, it's not like we were peppering the goal towards the end trying to get the winner, Andrew. There was a phases in around the 78th minute, particularly after they got their second, the equalizer, where I have to say I thought Brighton were going to go on and win it. And they had a goal ruled out for offside. The football that they played, their passing, Trossard was excellent too. The way they moved the ball, they're really, I mean, it's nothing coming from me. I've always said that. Imagine there was a time, Andrew, where I had to argue that Graham Potter was in fact a better coach than either Frank Lampard or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Imagine I had to, people would argue that point with me. It's just unbelievable. It's just obvious stuff. I thought Brighton were excellent, and now you're concerned because Liverpool look very stocked plentifully at the centre back position, which was a huge problem for them last season, which had a knock on effect in the midfield. Now what did they do with Fabinho, Thiago Alcantara, James Milner, and obviously Harvey Elliott, all out, and now Naby Keita joining them. And with a hamstring, you don't know how long that's going to be. And with Naby Keita, because of his previous injury problems at the club, it's a very threadbare midfield, Andrew. And again, fans are going to start to wonder, we've got this team that's offensively clicking. We've got this defensive team. And the fact that it may be an issue of depth and of a lack of signings that's going to cost Liverpool will irk certain sections of the Liverpool fans a lot. And FSG will be the receptors of a lot of that anger.
We've talked a lot about Liverpool, the way Klopp wants to play. We talked before about Pochettino, how he was kind of that, like, foot on the gas all the time, and how it had a wearing down effect maybe on some of those players.
Yes.
You know, Liverpool's depth is being tested. And I know we love the heavy metal style, but, like, can they continue to do that on multiple fronts and play that, you know, relentless pressing attack? It's going to be taxing on them.
But, you know, I don't see another way for this team to play. There's going to have to be guys who step up. Like, you know, I was wondering how Dele Alli's still at the club. There's a few players for Liverpool as well, you know.
Like who?
Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain still at the club. He's going to be leaned upon now in the absence of these players. He's going to have to be a key player. And young Curtis Jones as well is going to have to really give a lot. And Jordan Henderson is going to have to dig deep in that midfield until we can get some of these players back. It's as simple as that. I should also note that if I'm going to talk about City's shots on goal, Liverpool had 14 shots, only 3 on target. Brighton had 6 shots on target from 9.
Klopp was not happy afterwards. I mean, he talked about I talk about keeping the foot on the gas. He talked about kind of taking the foot off the gas pedal.
And when you're 2-0 up at home, it's almost unacceptable for that to happen. But there was a weariness and a tiredness, and the best term, one of the great football terms, Andrew, of our time, is they were leggy. They just looked leggy, and everything looked kind of forced, and it was almost a little throwback to some of the more insipid performances of last season.
Insipid.
Yep. Good word.
Did this cause a soulful walk or not?
No, didn't rise to that level? No.
Okay.
You're not going to win. You're not going to win every game, and it's October, or it was October.
Understood. Finally, JJ, in the Premier League, wanted to mention Chelsea. They lose Lukaku, lose Werner, but they continue to find goals. Reece James, what? Boy, the fullback position is... There's a lot of good ones out there right now.
Took his goal excellently.
Yeah, both of them.
Both of them, yeah.
I just keep wondering if they're the deepest team in the Premier League, and there's good competition for that. We talk about Man City all the time, but I saw this. I mean, this kind of like really brings it home. Alan Shearer tweeted, he said, "No Mount, no Lukaku, no Werner, no Pulisic, no Kovacic, no problem for Chelsea, battered Newcastle today, nothing from the tune at all." Some of that is Newcastle. They're complicit here. I mean, they're just...
Yeah.
They're not in a good
No, they're not
right
good.
Now.
But, you know, look at that kind of front attacking line. Hudson-Odoi, Kai Havertz at the top of it, Hakim Ziyech, you know, and behind them, Jorginho and N'Golo Kante, Chilwell, James. It's funny, Andrew, again with Manchester United, like spending a lot of money on really good players is... I can't speak highly enough of it.
Of what?
Spending a lot of money on really good players.
Yeah. That's...
It's a great system.
That's revelatory.
Yeah, Andrew, these are the kind of insights that we get paid the big bucks for.
Chelsea fans won't want to hear that from you, though.
No, oh, God, no.
They're not the only team that spends on good players.
Oh, no. And they'll tell you. And in fact, they're typing up their spreadsheets as we speak, and they're getting involved in the net spend argument, which is great. Can I talk quickly about three other things?
Of
just
course,
mentions.
Of course.
David Moyes is an amazing manager. And putting Aston Villa to the sword at Villa Park, in to say that they finished the game like they'd almost... It was almost like it was a semi-final and they got to the first cup final in a few years. There were being shirts taken off and handed into the crowd. The away fans were so loud. I mean, it was a 4-1 victory. They just ran away from Aston Villa in the end. But the mood... You'd have to go back to the Everton days to see such a a Moiselution, a really, really just happy West Ham travelling support. It was quite something. Leeds United got their second win, a crucial win of the season over Norwich. They made heavy weather of it, but they got it done. And back to Aston Villa, circling back, Andrew. At the start of the season, we talked about the players, Buendia and Danny Ings, that they brought in. And we, both of us liked their squad, and we thought they might make improvements. But it's not been a good period for them in the last little while. And you kind of wonder what happens for Dean Smith now. Is he, does he get put onto the hot seat?
Yes.
As they sit in 15th with three wins, but only one win in their last five.
He does. Whether we can all decide whether or not that's fair, but fair has no place in this sport. So he does get put on the hot seat. I will not. I thought Ings would be a good signing for them. It hasn't worked out so far. However, I will not go so far as to allow you to change history. I was very worried about Villa, and one of the reasons that I questioned whether or not it's entirely fair for Dean Smith to be put on the hot seat is because I had always said that Jack Grealish did so much for them. He just saw so much of the ball. And was just like a part of everything. Not, I mean, yes, they had other good players, of course, but Grealish was a huge part of that team. And taking him out of that, it's always like we're only just into November now. Like we're not even halfway through the season. So it was always going to take time, I think, for them to figure out how to move forward without that guy.
I should note as well, Ezri Konsa getting sent off on 50 minutes was not exactly helpful.
No, of course not. And then one other thing that I wanted to bring up is the save from Aaron Ramsdale. Definitely one of the early candidates for save of the season. Covered an extraordinary amount of ground to get to that ball. The ball was almost behind him. Showed great strength to keep that out of the net on a full dive. Like, how many feet off the ground do you think he was? Like, there's some brilliant still photos where he's just, like, you're almost just, like, in awe of, you know, where he's at in the goal to stretch and make that save. It was just amazing. Don't know really what else to say about it. Just wanted to make sure that he was mentioned and got his prize for that.
The you are right, though. I'm looking at some of the pictures. Oof. Those are ones that are, oh, they're spectacular.
One thing I should say about Arsenal, I don't want this to be too, you know, like, oh, Andrews is the Tottenham guy. He's just going to talk about Nuno and forget about Arsenal. That's not true. Because I did want to say one thing about Arsenal, as they had that hard start to the season, and they have come on and they're playing much better. They started that game brilliantly, up 2-0 after 18 minutes. You know, they're a different side, as many teams are, when they're able to play with a lead. But one thing I was thinking about with Arsenal that I wanted to mention this, I forgot to write it down, but I'm glad I thought of it now, is that, boy, it's amazing, JJ, what can happen to a team when your central defenders just simply don't F up.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, Arsenal had way more problems than just that. Like, there were issues up front. There were issues all over the place. But ultimately, we were coming on this podcast week after week for years talking about, oh, did you see that Mustafi back pass? Or, like, it was just like a calamity of errors week after week that were leading to goals, these self-inflicted errors. And now, look, I'm not saying that Gabriel and Ben White is the best central defense partnership in the league, but they're good. And it's just like, when you don't beat yourself, it's amazing how far that will take you. And I think Arsenal right now are kind of seeing that.
They're undefeated in five games since the derby. But you should caution yourself with that, because it was a 0-0 away at Brighton where they were really poor. 2-2 where they should have lost at home to Crystal Palace. Fair enough, they beat Aston Villa 3-1. Good win. That was a good win over Leicester, though. You got to say that, too.
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts about that one, friends.
Yeah. So, like, the days of, you know, David Luiz and Mustafi and whatever.
Oh,
was
they're
going
over now. We're going to see Invincibles Arsenal now.
All right, relax. I'm not saying that. But JJ, let's rewind early a few month, 2 months ago, a month ago,
I get
when
your
people
point.
Were telling us they were going to be relegated, and we had to talk them those people off the ledge.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's a quick MLS minute, and then we'll bounce here. I just got a couple things that I want to talk about, because we are the postseason beckons, JJ. We're kind of on the doorstep now.
Thank God. We got to get to it because it's the best part.
I love MLS's postseason, and I love the one and done. It's going to be fun, certainly. I just have three notes that I wanted to mention. The first one being, don't look now, JJ, but last night, 2-0, Philadelphia Union win over FC Cincinnati, and they're after a kind of like a slow build throughout the course of the season, where maybe, I don't know if it was just because like they had to deal with the loss of key players that have moved on to Europe. If it was just maybe like their focus was on CONCACAF Champions League and they're trying to balance those two things. Like the Union were just in positions that they hadn't really been in before. And it took them a while, and they're moving now. And they're up to second in the East. They can clinch that second spot with a win against NYCFC next week. And I think the big thing is they lost key players, but they brought in Daniel Gazdag, who was supposed to be an important signing for them, and he hadn't been. He was not making any real impact for them until recently. And last night, goal, assist, and that, as they get into the playoffs, if he's now starting to click, if it took a while, that can be forgiven if it builds to this point and he's a player for them in the postseason. So just something to keep an eye out there. My second thing, JJ, what do I always say about the Panenka? Whether it goes in or not.
You shouldn't do it. It's high risk. What are you doing?
If you do it, all right. Hey, you scored. Hey, high five. Get out. You're on the bench. JJ, Emmanuel Reynoso, he took this. He tested me yesterday because he was my preseason pick for MVP. I love him as a player. He's a great player for Minnesota United FC.
He really is.
But yesterday, they had a huge game against Sporting Kansas City. They're trying to get into the playoffs. It's 1-1 in the 38th, and Minnesota are awarded a penalty. And, like, this is – I know there's still 50 minutes left in the game or whatever, but this is the biggest moment of their season, unquestionably. And he Panenkas it. And he does score, but it was a really soft Panenka, almost to the point where Tim Melia dove to his left and then got back up and tried to dive back to the center of the goal again.
He didn't get close,
but the fact that he thought he could try, I was like,
"Can I ask you two questions about?"
You scored, buddy. Thank God.
I'll ask you two questions about this Panenka, because first of all, Tim Melia is a freak on penalties, right?
Yeah.
So 12 of this is from December 1st, 2020. I'm sure it's changed since, but I got this stat on ESPN. 12 of the 26 penalties he's faced in his MLS career have been unsuccessful.
Incredible.
That translates to a conversion rate against him of 53.6, the lowest such rate in league history among keepers who have faced at least 10 penalties. Melia is now a perfect 6-0 in matches decided on penalties during his professional career. So he obviously has a very good prowess for stopping penalties. So did Reynoso actually do this because he's worried if he takes an orthodox penalty, this guy is quite likely to get a hand on it?
I love your way of thinking. It shows real depth of thought, real next level outside the box intelligence. I'll never agree with that.
Okay.
I'll always believe that it's just kick the S out of it. And like you're Emmanuel Reynoso, you're good enough. You can place it. Like,
yeah, sure.
I don't know.
My second part to that is the penalty was not in the 89th minute or the 90th minute or 90 plus four.
I know.
It was the 37th minute. So there is a sense of, oh, okay.
Let me miss this.
No,
not let
me miss
this. We still have 50 minutes to make up for that. Like, what?
It's not as risky. We've got a whole other half of football.
That cannot be your way of thinking.
I'm just trying to figure it out, because I'll tell you what, that was ballsy.
And then my last thing here we go, JJ. Tonight, he returns. Fresh off, I think he just got married too, Jordan Morris, back. Seattle Brian Schmetzer says he's going to play. So these are the tune-ups, I guess, for Jordan Morris as Seattle embark upon a postseason run. I'm so happy to see him back playing just in time for the playoffs. And not only, of course, is he... like, is this hugely impactful for Seattle to just get that back now? Ooh, that's massive. But for Jordan himself, like, this is audition time. He was, I don't know if it was a starter, probably not, but he was a fixture to a certain extent with the U.S. men. And we've got important qualifiers coming up. It'd be nice to know that they can throw him back into the mix. So this is a little bit of an audition for old Triple G as well.
Yeah, I think... coming back from such a catastrophic injury, the first thing he needs to do is get the club form down, get his feet under him, get a few games. I think the national team won't even be in his mind, but it will be. Triple G will definitely be watching.
I bet it will be. It'll be in his mind. There's a World Cup not far off.
It shouldn't be. He's got to be very, very process orientated here.
Okay. Yeah.
That would be my advice.
Understood. You can tell him.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Can I just say a couple of things?
Yeah.
The East continues to be weird. New England, obviously, Supporters Shield, blah, 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 way out ahead, 20 points ahead of Philadelphia at this point. But you've got something, a little bit of congestion happening and some nice matches coming up. So the Red Bulls did what they needed to do. They beat Montreal, and New York City had a win as well.
Pretty dramatic, so York, by the way. Red Bulls scored what, in the 91st?
Something
huge.
Like that.
Yeah.
So New York City are on 50, Orlando City are on 48, Atlanta United 47, and the Red Bulls on 46. And the games coming up we have are on Wednesday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., the Red Bulls versus Atlanta United. That is a big, big game. And New York City then on Sunday, next Sunday, they have a pretty massive game as well against the Philadelphia Union, while Atlanta should get 3 points away at Cincinnati, which would help push them or propel them or cement them, really. Well, no, actually propel them into the playoffs. But it's still congested.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only 2 points between DC United and eighth, and their big further down the turnpike rivals, the Red Bulls, on 46, so in the last playoff position. So there could be some exciting stuff even before we get to the playoffs.
Yeah, and one other thing I forgot to mention, props to Wando. Chris Wondolowski got his 170th career goal in a great game. San Jose beat RSL 4-3. Cade Cowell scored a great one in that game, too.
That was a super goal.
Yeah.
That was a really great goal.
Cowell's just interesting. He started the season so well, and we were just like, oh, my God, here we go, another huge talent. And by the way, he very well might be. But then he went, like, literally months, I think, without scoring. But he reemerged in unbelievable fashion.
He's also a child.
He's but a boy. But a boy. Yeah.
By the way, so Wanda got his
170th
in all MLS competitions, or in all league play, right?
Yeah, I believe so. What I'm reading here just says 170th career goal.
Oh, okay, so that's
that may be more than.
Yeah, that would be more than that as well. Yeah. And we're going to get out of here without mentioning Belgium. So,
okay, well, fair enough.
Okay,
even though you just mentioned it,
I know.
Doesn't really count. Yeah, I'm happy just to get out of here, JJ. There's been a sickness running through my house, and like I could barely speak the other day. I was on the phone with someone, and you ever get like a real bad coughing attack?
Yeah.
Where, like, that's it. You're done. Like, your body has decided, nope, you're just not going to. We're shutting you down for 5 minutes. You can't talk. That happened to me while on the phone the other day.
Oh.
It's
oh, wow.
Just so humiliating.
So did you have to hang up?
I just started like, I could feel it. I got that thing in my throat, and I was just like, I'm sorry, I gotta go. And I just hung up the phone. And the person on the other end must have just been like, that was probably the weirdest interaction I'll have today. So, yeah, I'm just glad that we got through this and none of that. So I feel like I'm back. Back
Good
to
stuff.
Full speech.
I'm glad. I'm glad. We will maybe be back later in the week.
We'll see. We shall see.
And then that was a very firm.
We'll see. I mean, there can be no way of knowing in situations.
Well, if we are, there'll be a mailbag. Okay.
And we're not far off from another international frenzy as well, which I.
That's true. We should.
We should fond of. I can't wait. It's Mexico.
We should contain our juices. We should keep them within us.
Yeah.
Ooh. And let them flow.
Oh my God! Enough. Ugh. Weird. All right.
Well, yeah, no, I went down a bad road with that.
All right, let's just stop. All right.
Okay.
Let's just stop. Hey, to you, I say.
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.